Hello, this is Dr. Parker Wilson, and this is the topic of What is Mindfulness? I want to begin by making a distinction between consciousness and mind. Consciousness is that basic, fundamental, primordial awareness, our sentience, our basic underlying sentience, our awareness. Mind is that which arises in that larger awareness. And mind is made up of all of our mental phenomena. Our mind consists of thoughts, emotions, judgments, opinions, fantasies, dreams, memories. All of these things exist in the domain of the human mind. And I call the mind our sixth sense. Our sixth sense. What I mean by that is, for example, it would be what was left if you were placed in a sensory deprivation tank. So if you were placed in such a tank where you had no vision, you had no auditory capabilities, there was nothing to hear, there was nothing to taste, there was nothing to touch, what would be left if all of your physical senses were taken out of the picture? Well, you would have thoughts, emotions, judgments, opinions, fantasies, memories, dreams. All of these things are the mind. And they are our most important sense. And we really don't know very much about the mind. We've mostly studied scientifically those aspects of the mind that we could get our hands around, scientifically speaking, which doesn't turn out to be really a hell of a lot. We can study things reductionistically. We can study neurology and the human body. We can study the behaviors that human beings exhibit. But science is not very well equipped to study mental phenomena. So we don't understand what mind is very well. We don't understand what consciousness is. Certainly we have no working definition of consciousness, and no way to acquire a working definition of consciousness if we approach it from the scientific method, because science is really quite adept at working with third-person phenomena, mental, physical phenomena, you know, something that can be broken down and understood, like this desk in front of me. Physics and chemistry could come in and make a very clear analysis of this desk, but not about my thoughts, my emotions, my judgments, my opinions, my beliefs, consciousness in general. Science doesn't have a lot to say about that because it can't measure it, it can't break it down. It's not a physical phenomenon. And science was particularly designed to study physical phenomena. So mind and consciousness, along with phenomena like the placebo effect, deja vu, dreams, intuition, near-death experiences, all of these things are really very difficult for science to explore. And because we're so rooted in the scientific method as psychologists, you know, about a century ago, we just decided that they could not be explored, and went a little bit further with radical behaviorism and decided that they didn't exist at all, thoughts and emotions and so on and so forth. And now we've decided that that, of course, is ridiculous, and we're looking for ways to explore mind and explore consciousness. We're starting to understand that we need a different mode of inquiry to explore mind, all of our mental phenomena, thoughts, emotions, dreams, opinions, judgments, beliefs, all of these things. But we haven't quite figured out what that is yet. However, fortunately for us, there are cultures who have been exploring mind and working with mind and exploring consciousness for thousands of years, and we have come across some of their techniques. And one of these techniques for exploring mind and learning how to work with your mind and training your mind is mindfulness. And it's particularly needed in our society because, as I've noticed, in our society, we just don't teach children anything about how to work with thought, emotion, judgment, opinion, belief. And we have some pretty powerful and even afflictive emotions. Anger, wrath, lust, greed, all of these things are emotional experiences. And no one ever teaches us how to work with an emotion. What is an emotion? What is a thought? How do thoughts create emotion? How does emotion create thought? We just don't have any classes on this to offer our children. We just don't have any education about it. And so by the time we're 18 and we've gotten through high school, most of us just simply believe that we are what we think, that we are what we feel, that we are our beliefs, and so on. And this just is not the case. All of our thoughts and our emotions, our judgments and opinions are very transitory things. And this is very easy to see if you take your life as it is now, currently, and ask yourself the question of, what do you believe in? What do you think about? What are your dreams right now? What are your priorities in life? What do you spend a great amount of time doing? What are your political beliefs, your religious beliefs? Just take a real brief inventory of that, and then subtract 15 years off of your life. And ask yourself, 15 years ago, what did I believe in? What were my priorities? What were my relationships in that life? Who were the important people in my life? How did I feel about them? What did I spend a lot of time doing? And then you can subtract 15 years off of that, going back 30 years, if you can, depends on how old you are. But you can see that these things change and shift. All of our thoughts, emotions, judgments, opinions, beliefs, dreams, fantasies, all of these things shift and change with time. Even people's religious beliefs change and shift. Their political beliefs certainly change and shift. The things that we usually stand upon as being solid ground under our feet relative to who we are, our thoughts, our emotions, our judgments, our opinions, these things change. And they're quite transitory. So, having reached the point of 18 without any education at all about what mind is, most of us believe we are our thoughts and our emotions. They are who we are. We identify with them. And normally we are really all caught up in our mental phenomena. We're involved with them. We identify with them. We are lost in them. And we get hooked by these things very frequently. They're just, over the course of a life, there are certain emotions and thoughts that are just harder to deal with than others. For all of us. So the idea of mindfulness is, and psychotherapy for that matter, is what if we ceased being so caught up and hooked by, involved with, and identified with all of these transitory mental phenomena, all of our thoughts and emotions, judgments and opinions? What if we could somehow get some space between us and all of those thoughts and emotions, judgments and opinions? What if we could get some space between us and our mind? This would help us to stop being so psychologically overwhelmed by certain emotions. This would help us get some space between ourselves and our emotions, especially those powerful emotions. This would help us to learn to stay with our own experience, to not exit things so much. We would not be so inclined to exit our own experience all the time by numbing out or getting angry and aggressive, blaming other people, or by being overly materialistic, craving and seeking material. We could learn to work with our thoughts and emotions, those same thoughts and emotions that had previously overwhelmed us, that were limits for us, and that we just kind of habitually exited all the time. We ran from them because they scared us, and we exited them in unhealthy ways. We could actually slow down, create some awareness, create some space between us and the experience of all those emotions, and we could learn to work with them. And this is where psychotherapy comes in quite effectively. And you should feel free to listen to my explanation of psychotherapy. It's on another one of my audio files. In Buddhism, we say that the mind is like an untrained puppy. There are many analogies for this, but I like the untrained puppy. If you've got a puppy in your life, and he's brand new, right, and he doesn't know anything about, he's not housebroken, he doesn't know anything about only going to the bathroom outside and these kind of things. Well, how do you start training a puppy like that? Well, you get some newspaper, and you put it on the newspaper, and the dog will wander off, and you'll grab it again and put it back on the newspaper, and it'll wander off again, and you'll grab it again and put it back on the newspaper. And eventually it'll go to the bathroom on the newspaper, and you'll praise it and give it lots of love. And eventually, after you've done this 200 or 300 or 400 times, the dog starts to get the idea that it's only supposed to go on the newspaper, and then you can transfer the newspaper outside, and then eventually you can remove the newspaper and the dog learns to go outside, right? So you've trained this dog. Your mind is very close to this. It's very chaotic and undisciplined. It lacks focus. It's wandering all over the place all the time. It's unable to stay still. And people notice this right off the bat when they begin mindfulness training, that they'll try to stay focused. They'll try to stay concentrated on their breathing or the tactile sensations of the body, whatever the object of meditation is in mindfulness. They'll try and stay with the object of meditation, but they will be constantly distracted. by thoughts, emotions, judgments, opinions, perceptions, memories, dreams, fantasies. They'll become lost in thought. And most of us notice this right away. And it's a very profound realization. Because you're listening to this right now and you go, yeah, that's true. It's different when you're actually in meditation, when you actually see it for yourself. When you don't need somebody to tell this to you, you actually notice it. And you become aware yourself of the fact that your mind is really chaotic and always churning from one thought to another, one emotion to another. And this is the benefit of mindfulness. It generates awareness. It generates awareness. You begin to introspect. You begin to see that you are actually lost in thought quite regularly. And you begin to wonder what it would be like if your mind was more concentrated and more focused. What it would be like if you actually had some space in between you and the experience of tremendous irritation or frustration. If you had some space between you and the experience of loneliness. If you had some space and some awareness between you and the experience of helplessness. What would that be like? Mindfulness begins with this kind of moment of clarity in realizing that your mind is fundamentally out of control and really prone to unhealthy habits in reaction to powerful emotions and thoughts. For example, I give this example, and it's disturbing to some people, but it's a good example of mindfulness. In my postdoctoral work and my fourth year internship as well, I worked with men convicted of sex offenses. And there was one example in particular that I remember. And these guys were there for rape, pedophilia, child molestation, flashing, exhibitionism, voyeurism, things like that. And all of them were caught up in these real heavy-duty, afflictive, harmful habits of coping with their emotions. So when they would feel helpless or hopeless, lonely, when they would feel overwhelmed with despair, with grief and loss, they were experiencing grief and loss, they tended to exit with anger and aggression and numbing out, but they took sexual forms with that. So they would feel better at the expense of other people through sexual avenues. And the first step is to create mindfulness, create awareness about the fact that they do this. I remember one guy in particular who was convicted of rape, and he had two or three victims that he wasn't adjudicated for, and this had been a long-standing habit with this guy, and like most sex offenders, he had come up through exhibitionism and voyeurism to eventually put hands on, and so this was a long history of real afflictive, unhealthy, and harmful ways of exiting his own experience. And I taught him mindfulness meditation along with a group of other men convicted of sex offenses. And we'd been doing it for 3 or 4, 5, 6 weeks, something like that. And his habit, he had a habit of objectifying and degrading women. So just his internal dialogue about women would be very harmful, very unhealthy, very afflictive. And in this way, he objectified women, and it's very easy to become angry at and aggressive with, sexually aggressive with an object. And I made this point to him many times in therapy, and he didn't really see it. Then he came in for his group one day, and he was real shocked and shaken, and he told the story of having been driving down Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles, and he had seen women walking by on the street. And his usual internal dialogue, his habitual dialogue to objectify and degrade these women had kicked in, talking about their body parts, talking about how they were whores, this kind of thing. This is all going on inside his head, talking to himself, internal dialogue. And because of his mindfulness training, he saw himself engaging with these very afflictive dialogues. He saw himself ramping up his objectification and his degradation of these women. He saw it clearly, saw himself doing it, saw himself lost in these unhealthy habits, mental habits, that eventually spawned the behaviors that were so harmful and destructive, both to himself and other people. He saw it clearly. He had a moment of clarity, what alcoholics call a moment of clarity. And this moment of clarity came from mindfulness, came from the training of mindfulness. And then from that point, we were able to work in psychotherapy with that habit. I was able to teach him to learn how to work with that. teach them to learn how to minimize this, to stop feeding this so much, to eventually starve it away, and to in turn cultivate and grow and create new, healthy, good psychological habits to replace it. But it begins with that moment of awareness, that moment of clarity, that moment of realization. So we begin creating this kind of awareness very, very slowly. For example, one of my teachers, Thich Nhat Hanh, had a suggestion to become introspective, to become mindful whenever you see the color red, for instance. So if you see the color red, at that moment just stop and notice what you were thinking about. Notice what you were feeling. Notice what you were doing. Just become aware of it. No real deep analysis needed here. You just become aware of it. Ask yourself, what am I thinking right now? What am I feeling right now? What's going on with me right now? What am I doing? Just a real brief check-in, real quick, you know? So every time you see the color red, which means you're at a stop sign, or you see a truck painted red, or, you know, whatever object in your house is red, you're watching TV and red comes on the screen somehow, you just take a moment of introspection. You get a little space between you and everything that you were thinking and feeling at that moment. And you'll notice, if you do this regularly, if you do it 100, 200, 300 times, 1,000 times, 5,000 times, you'll start to see yourself. Man, I was really lost and caught up in whatever I was doing right then. And you'll catch yourself in moments of afflictive functioning. You'll catch yourself in moments of overwhelm. You'll catch yourself experiencing afflictive emotions that usually your habit to coping with these afflictive emotions, loneliness, helplessness, whatever it is, you'll catch yourself engaged in exiting that. You'll catch yourself doing all kinds of, catch yourself in the act of doing all kinds of different things. And it'll start to make you curious about it. And it'll start to make you curious about your mind. And it'll start motivating you to really start generating even more awareness of your mind. And psychotherapy is the perfect complement to mindfulness practice. Even that little basic thing that I just suggested to you. Just introspect at the moment you see the color red. Ask yourself, what am I thinking? What am I feeling? Nothing quick, nothing fast. Deep and intense, rather. Just quick and fast, quick and dirty kind of check-in. If you do that 1,000 times over the next 3 months, you'll start to develop awareness. You can't help but do that. It's kind of like if you run a mile every day, running a mile will start to become quite easy. Your body will change, your metabolism will change. It's a natural byproduct of doing that kind of activity. Well, awareness, psychological awareness and realization are a natural byproduct of just doing that little basic thing I just said, introspect when you see the color red. Now, psychotherapy goes along with this very well, because based on introspection, psychotherapy and mindfulness really work to create this powerful psychological awareness of your mind. And remember, your mind, again, are all of your thoughts and emotions, judgments and opinions, so on and so forth, fantasies, dreams, wishes, all of these things are mind. And then it teaches you how to clearly work with your problematic thoughts and emotions. Where do you get overwhelmed? What are your points of overwhelm? What are your psychological limits? How do you cope with those limits? Do you exit? If you exit, how do you exit? Do you numb out? And if you numb out, how do you do that? Do you use drugs? Do you use alcohol? Do you use TV? Do you use sex, gambling, food? How do you numb out? If you get angry and aggressive, how do you do that? Do you blame other people for the afflictive emotions that you're feeling? Do you project them onto other people and blame them? Do you raise your voice? Do you yell? Do you get manipulative? Do you get weepy? What do you do to get angry and aggressive? Or do you get materialistic? Do you go out and buy things that you don't need? Do you want to go out and buy a $300 pair of shoes or an expensive watch? You just want to go out and spend money, maybe go out to a $300 dinner? How do you exit your own experience? What are your own points of overwhelm? What are your limits? And once you've learned that, you can ask yourself, if I created awareness about these things, if I saw myself exiting, if I saw myself becoming overwhelmed, I saw myself reaching a limit and I saw myself exiting, how could I change that? How could I learn to work with that? How could I give that some space and clarity? How could I learn to stay with my own experience? How could I learn to accept the fact that there are times in life when things get lonely? There are times in life when I lose. I will lose people, places, and things that I love. And I'll be sad. I'll have grief about that. There are times in life where I'm supposed to be depressed. There's nothing wrong. There's nothing to fix. That's just a part of life. What would happen if I was able to give some space and clarity to that, if I was able to stay with that, if I was able to learn to give tremendous meaning to my difficult times in this life, if I learned how to create meaning for my own suffering and I stopped checking out and exiting so much, how would that change everything? How would it change my work? How would it change my relationships with my loved ones, my family life? How would it change everything? How would it change my experience of my own life and how I relate to my own mind? It can only possibly create good things. So I hope this has been a useful, very brief explanation of mindfulness. And I hope that you contact me. Do take advantage of my free consultation. I'm happy to talk to you. Email me, call me. I talk to people all the time. It's really no big deal. And I hope to hear from you soon, and I hope you found this to be useful. Thanks.